Okay, three things today. Rav Amital introduced a very interesting word throughout the years. This is not about a particular sikha. We'll talk about two specific issues. Throughout the years, which, again, I look back at this and I realize how influential, how formative Rav Amital's sikhot were in me, then most people wouldn't associate with Yom HaTzmut. If I ask you, what do you do in Yom HaTzmut? We celebrate, we say Shira, we thank Hashem. Rav Amital told us about Cheshbon HaNefesh. Sound like Yom Kippur. That every year Yom HaTzmut was an opportunity and a responsibility to think about individually how we saw the process, how we saw Eretz Yisrael, collectively how the nation was doing, and of course I would say probably even ideologically, because this is where he updated his version of Geula and his version of what Eretz Yisrael meant. That's what made these speeches so they were like State of the Unions of Zionism. Where are we at? Where is our country at? So every year when Yom HaTzmut comes and you're looking 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what should I do on Yom HaTzmut? Let me go get a falafel. Let me turn on Israeli news or something. It's also a chance to think about. Like Yom Kippur is your opportunity to soul search how you are in your relationship with Hashem and Torah Mitzvahs in general. Yom HaTzmut is a chance to think about where we are as a people, where I am in my relationship to Israel. Have I been to Israel recently enough? The whole notion of employing Yom HaTzmut to check your redemptive temperature and to see how you're faring was something which I take naturally, but Rav Amital shaped us with it. He also, as I alluded to yesterday, would speak very frequently during the 80s in particular. Remember, the 80s is about 30 years or so, 40 years after Medinas Yisrael, 35, 40 years. There's a lot of fissures breaking out in society. This is really one of the earliest political polarizations until the 80s. There were differences. Obviously, there were political parties, but we were at war and in a constant state of war, and peace wasn't on the horizon. So that aspect to split the country, of course there were divisions, and of course there were decisions to be made, but it wasn't as polarizing. Now it's the 80s. There's great polarity. Left-wing and right-wing camps are starting to develop. And in the wake of Begin's election in the late 70s, which created polarity between Ashkenazi and Sephardi Jews, and some of the... So all of a sudden, you're having fissures break out in Israel. Some people, some things... Why isn't there unity in Israel? So there is a lot of unity and solidarity in many ways. But just think about it. There are four fault lines that divide Israel. Ashkenazi, Sephardi, Dati, Chiloni, left-wing, right-wing, and high-income, low-income. So that means if you're sitting across the table from another Israeli, the chances that you overlap on all four of these identity markers is almost nil. So there's always going to be something to talk about, always something going to argue about. But we all get along. It's a one big family. We like each other. We argue. We fight. We scream at each other. We all get along. But all of a sudden, these fault lines are starting to develop. And when people feel that they're disempowered by the government, there's a lot of anti-government protests and anti-government sentiment. And of course, in the 90s, it blows up in Yigal Amir. And unfortunately, we still live in a period in which there's violence directed towards soldiers and towards policemen and from religious-minded people, let alone. So he's starting to speak a lot about Malchus Yisrael, about what does it mean to have a melech. And even when we don't have a melech figurehead, we don't have the sovereignty and the monarchy that we dream for and that we continue to daven for, that we still have, if not a melech, but at least Malchus. I actually wrote a halachic article about that in the early 90s, and I wonder if some of it subconsciously was a halachic article, but was there the drive for the article, things that I heard from Rav Amital conceptually, that we may not have a melech, but we do have Malchus. And he spoke about the Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippur, that he would make several additional brachos surrounding the Kriyas HaTorah. And one of the brachas was to help Am Yisrael. They should have a melech, and they should. And then there's another bracha about Malchus B'Yisrael, a separate bracha, not just to save and to rescue the Jewish people, Hoshas Amcha Yisrael, but Yasser Melech M'Yisrael. So the Kohen Gadol saw fit on Yom Kippur, where he has a limited quota of brachas. He can't just make endless brachas to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for sovereignty, and ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for self-governance, and ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Malchus. He spoke a lot on Yom HaTzmut and Yom Kippur, in Hanukkah, about the Hanukkah miracle and how deflating the post-Hanukkah period was, and how strife-ridden the period of the second Beis HaMikdash was after the Hanukkah episode, one of the darkest periods of Jewish history, and how Josephus relates that, and those of you who have a little bit of historical sensitivity, The second Beis HaMikdash wasn't destroyed. The second Beis HaMikdash fell in on itself. There were four or five factions in Yerushalayim. They were at war with one another. And they burnt each other's... They had enough grain in Yerushalayim to withstand a 4 or 5 year Roman siege. Now, I assume at some point, sadly, it seems a little bit like the Ukraine and Russia now, that Ukraine's putting up a very, very incredible fight and they're very heroic, but unfortunately, you know, they can hold out for only a certain amount of time. The formidable Russian weaponry, it seems as if it's almost invincible in terms of the Ukraine. And we'll see what else it happens. Politics, there's other factors at play. But the Jewish people in Israel, they could have withheld a couple of years of a Roman siege. But they detested each other. They shot each other in the leg. People burned each other's wheat silos. People killed one another. At a certain point, the Roman Josephus reports walked into a city of corpses because everyone's starving and everyone was murdering one another. They hardly had to take Yerushalayim. They just had to snap their fingers and Yerushalayim was conquered. It's a very, very sad state. And even militarily, the wars of Hanukkah lingered. There were terrible massacres. If you know Sefer HaMakabim, after the victory, there were many, many aftershocks and after tremors where there was a lot of massacres of the Jews up north. So this was not a period of great, great, grand redemption. And what are we celebrating? So there's a tendency to focus on the oil. Well, the sovereignty wasn't great and the state of the Jewish people wasn't exemplary. It's a sad period. But you just isolate, hone in on that nace of the Ner Hanukkah. We received an incredible miracle from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Regardless of the political environment in which this miracle occurred, we should celebrate Hanukkah. But the Rambam doesn't mention the Ner Hanukkah. The Rambam in the beginning doesn't mention. He mentions Chazor Malchus L'Yisrael. Those three words. Chazor Malchus L'Yisrael. Chazor Malchus L'Yisrael. And Rav Amital said, what does that mean? So we're not celebrating the oil. What are we celebrating? Half-baked sovereignty, lingering massacres, internecine civil war. What are we celebrating? And Rav Amital honed in on this Rambam. Every year, Hanukkah, in the 80s, I remember this. This is a Rambam I can never forget. Rav Amital planted in my subconscious, Chazor Malchus L'Yisrael, Chazor Malchus L'Yisrael, Chazor Malchus L'Yisrael, Yesu Masayim Shana. And in the 80s, you started to have people who made the following mathematical equation. I'm not great at math, even though I majored in math. I'm not great at math, but I know a little bit of math. So you know how there's a less than sign and equal and more than sign? So people felt the following equation was true, and Rav Amital flipped the script. People felt that Eretz Yisrael was more important than Malchus Yisrael. So for the sake of Eretz Yisrael Hashlema, for the sake of territories, for the sake of settlement, for the sake of... It was appropriate and legitimate to take measures against Malchus Yisrael, whether it's to disobey the law, whether it's Chas Hashem to demonstrate aggression towards the symbols of Malchus Yisrael. And Rav Amital flipped the script. He said, Eretz Yisrael is not more important than Malchus Yisrael. And for the sake of Eretz Yisrael, you still have to preserve responsible treatment of government laws and responsible treatment of government symbols and responsible talk towards government politicians, even though they're your opponents. And and that's probably one of the fault lines between Rav Amital's form of modern Zionism and maybe some of the other people in religious camps who come to a different conclusion, who feel that the eternal integrity of Eretz Yisrael justifies, I'm not speaking for everyone, obviously there's many shades of this, but I'm sure many people would disagree with that, just like Rav Amital, in a totally different area, spoke about Eretz Yisrael versus Am Yisrael. Same thing, the religious parties, religious factions over the 20, 30 years, 80s, 90s, 2s, maybe it's changing a little bit, were so concerned with Eretz Yisrael and the program and the agenda of Eretz Yisrael, they were willing to focus their attention even at the cost of Am Yisrael. What I mean at the cost of Am Yisrael, I can say that two ways. Number one is, well, what do you spend your time, your resources on? Politically, if you ask your average Israeli, what are the religious parties, what's their political platform? Settlements. What are the secular parties, what's their political platform? Social welfare, education, moral society. Shouldn't that be our political platform? And not just, of course, education, social welfare, and the general tenor of society, but also religious education. So where should we invest our resources? Should it be in bolstering Am Yisrael, or you can't do both, but at some point it's going to be a question of dwindling resources. Where you going to, and then of course in the 80s it came to a different type of a head or a different type of a clash. What would happen if Am Yisrael's benefit would be served by relinquishing lands in Israel? Again, today those issues, unfortunately, sadly, because we've reached such a standstill in the political arena. But in those days, that was a real question. People were thinking about peace accords and land for peace and rightly or wrongly, those were real agendas. And in theory, within the context of the feasibility of those agendas, it may have come down to that issue. What if the Jewish people are better served by living in less area of Eretz Yisrael? What if there's more peace? What if there's less antagonism? What if we maintain our democratic majority? So those were two math equations that Rav Amital inverted, because the primacy of Eretz Yisrael, land and nationalism, can become so feverish and can become so captivating that it starts to play with what should be more balanced moral, historical, and even halachic equations. So in the 80s, Rav Amital was speaking a lot about Malchus Yisrael. He quoted the Kohen Gadol's Tvila. He quoted Chazor Malchus Li Yisrael. He spoke a lot about people who, and he felt maybe you could say this is where he made a, I don't want to say break, but some of the differences between the Talmidim and Rav Kook and Rav Amital came to the fore. And Malchus Yisrael is certainly a factor within the pantheons of factors, within the multivariable equation, and maybe even the primary factor. Okay, so again, tomorrow we'll try to learn some Rashis. Friday, Sunday, probably Monday, Nashir, and we'll resume on Tuesday. There's a expiry date on this. We can't really learn about these issues past Shavua, so we'll try to keep it going. Okay? Have a good day, everyone. You're welcome.